All right, we're about now to take into consideration and assess naturalist candidates for divinity. That is to say, somebody has rejected that it's God the Creator. There's no transcendent creator. But rather, the divine reality, the reality that's self-existent, that everything else depends on, is of some nature, some character, and it corresponds to a certain kind of properties and laws that we experience, that the world exhibits to us. And the candidates for these, historically speaking, have been such things as mathematical. The ancient Pythagoreans, I pointed out in an earlier talk, thought that all things were made of numbers. Nobody quite goes that far today, and they certainly don't worship them as the Pythagoreans did. But there are still people that think that the reality in which we live is basically mathematical. Werner Heisenberg said things like that, that the ultimate laws of nature were going to turn out to be eternal laws, mathematical laws for motion. Other people have held that the basic reality is spatial. There were people who held not so long ago, especially, that space is infinite and eternal. It's self-existent. And space spontaneously generates matter. And from there on, the story is that things are physical, and that explains everything about our world. And so the physical is also one. A person who thinks that the basic reality, the basic character of reality that in which we find ourselves as physical, is called a materialist. In philosophy, that doesn't mean somebody who's out only to grub for as much money or as many physical things as they can own. It doesn't mean that. It means that basically reality has physical properties and laws. And some of those who hold that position go so far as to try to argue that reality has only physical properties and laws, that all the rest of we seem to experience in our everyday experience is an illusion. Other people have held that it's not just physical, but, say, logical. That's been a popular one as well. That the laws of logic are the ultimate laws of reality, and that they, in interacting with matter, produce the kind of world we find ourselves in. That's been a long-standing argument that it's logic. Aristotle held the logical laws to be the very laws of being. Let's just confine ourselves to these for now. These aren't the only candidates that have been put forward, but there are also mix and match combinations of these. There have been people that have said it's mathematical plus physical. No, it's logical plus physical. Others have actually held that the nature of reality is really sensory, and just use that as a term to approximate the view that we call phenomenalism. That sounds very strange to the average person, and I'm glad that it does, because it's nuts. It holds that all we really know are sensations, our sensations. So what we see, taste, touch, hear, and smell, blobs of color arranged in certain ways, certain kinds of sounds, and so that's reality. That's all we can ever know. So those are the things that are self-existent and explain our reality insofar as it can be explained. And the logical positivists of the 20th century held that it's sensory plus logical. The sensory is what comes to us. The logical is what we impose on that and try to make sense of it. These are all candidates, and I call them naturalist candidates. That's the term, naturalism. It means all there is the universe or the multiverse, if you think there are many universes. But all there is of the natural stuff, there's nothing supernatural. There's no creator God that has called all this into existence. And so in each proposal that whatever it is that's divine has this character, there is an argument made for it being that in philosophy, and we're going to assess those arguments now. What I want to do, in order to test them, is to try to conceive of reality being as they claim it is. If that sounds overly simple, it's going to turn out to be a little more complicated, but nothing you can't handle. Let's take, for example, our friends the materialists, who want to say that everything is basically physical. Physical properties and laws are self-existent. They don't have a creator. Everything else is made out of is combinations of physical things with physical properties under physical laws. So this has independent existence. Remember, that's what divine means. It's independent. It's non-dependent, however you want to put it. I've been using the word self-existent when I talked about other divinity beliefs. So this has to be independent of all the rest. That's why it's the ultimate reality is of that nature.
So we're let me jump in on that. Is that the kind of thing that comes into play when you have someone like Stephen Hawking, who died recently, talking about the universe as it is could not have been anything different because the characteristics of physical things have to be this way? Is that what you're saying here?
Not quite. It's close. Okay. It's close. For Hawking, and I'm going now by his last book. I read the last one, some others, but maybe not all, but also the last one. He assumes already that the universe is fundamentally physical. And it's the physical properties and laws that explain what's going on. For him, if you have space-time and you have any kind of matter, that plus the law of gravitation is going to eventually produce the universe as we experience it.
Okay, so he kind of mixes things together? Is that what I hear you
When
saying?
He says it accounts for the universe, he doesn't mean the origin of the entire universe.
Oh, okay.
He means how the universe now is arranged. So we can explain that just with matter, space, and the law of gravitation. But of course, a Christian would say, where did matter, space, and the law of gravitation come from? God created them. And the reason that Hawking rejects that is that he's thinking only of God as an explanation for how it came to be arranged the way it is.
Yeah, okay.
Not how it came to be at all. Not why there's anything whatsoever. The answer to that is because God self-existent and created other things. That's ruled out for him. But he's still thinking of God as a hypothesis that people make in order to plug gaps in their understanding of the way the universe, of the way we find the universe now. And since he finds there are no gaps to plug, he says, well, I don't need that hypothesis. I hope it's clear by now that my argument throughout this course has been that belief in God is not a hypothesis. It's not an invention that we come up with in order to plug our explanatory gaps. Belief in God is an experience report. People experience God. And we've talked about that at some length. I'm not going to repeat all that now. But let's take these claims for other gods, right? Other divinities, and say, can we conceive of any of these being independent of all the rest? And I'm going to argue we can't. Can't conceive of them. That won't stop materialists from having the physical side of reality appear irresistibly to be divine. That will be their self-evident divinity belief. Or the people who said it was space, or numbers, or logic, or sensations, or combinations. I grant that they have their experience of self-evidence as we have ours with respect to what we find to be divine. But there's a big difference between belief in God and belief that it's the physical or the spatial or the mathematical or the logical and so on.
Now, when you're saying divine, it's do they ever call it divine or do they just say this is self-existent or it has always been?
That's right. They often use terms like self-sufficient and so on.
They're not going to
rarely, but sometimes they do.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes. So Richard Dawkins, for example, will say, "Well, I think it's the universe that's divine. That's all. That's my God."
Okay.
That's not just metaphorical talk. In my view, that's he's recognizing what he's really doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering if anybody did that, or did they just...
Rarely, but it does happen.
Okay.
There's a materialist biologist who said, I'm not a materialist because science gives that to me. I bring my materialism to doing science. And it's why we sometimes end up with conclusions that sound counterintuitive or wildly wrong. That's okay, but that's what materialism requires. That's my faith, my holy faith. That's a bit pretty amazing. But that's not just metaphor. See, I'm saying that's literally right.
Okay.
Okay,
got it.
So, independent or self-existent, and it's what everything else depends on. The self-existent origin of all else, is the way I put it back when we were talking about different religions and so on. So now we're going to make a thought experiment, and the thought experiment is going to be to try to conceive of the physical independently of all the rest. All right? And before we do that, I have to give you a little more background. And it may seem at first this background has nothing to do with the subject, but it has a lot to do with it. And so I offer it subject to connection, as they say in court. And this has to do with the fact that things exhibit these properties in two ways to our experience. Things have mathematical, spatial, physical, logical, sensory. They seem to have all these kinds of properties. And the two ways they have them that are exhibited to our experience are, I'm going to call them, active and passive. So, let's take a mathematical example. The Earth, we know, to be the third planet from the Sun. The Earth has that property actively. That means it doesn't depend on us or anything else. It has the third property of the Sun, from being the third planet from the Sun, whether we know it or not, or whether there are people to know it or not. But that's its active property. It also has the property of being countable. And if it didn't have that property, we couldn't have counted it. We wouldn't know it to be the third planet from the Sun. Countable. Now, a lot of people would say, well, that's just us projecting that onto the Earth. That won't fly. Unless the planet actually has that property, we couldn't count it. You can't get away with saying, well, I can count that planet, but it's not countable. That's self-contradictory. So these passive properties are real, and they're just as crucial to our knowledge as are the active ones. Take, for example, the spatial. The Earth is locatable in space. It has a location at any given time. It has a location actively. It's locatable by us. That's a passive property. But things have physical properties, both actively and passively. They have logical properties. Look at this one, because this has been such a repeated candidate for divinity. Say, things have passive logical properties? What could that mean? Only statements and arguments have logical properties, such as the property being true or false, or the property being contradictory or contrary, or a logical argument has the characteristic of being valid. That is, if its premises are true, its conclusion must also be true. But that only applies to stuff in language. And I'm standing here saying, no, that's not true. Passively, this marker that I'm using has logical properties. What would that be? Well, how about the property of being logically distinguishable by us? It's also logically conceivable by us. So passively speaking, everything that we experience has some logical property or other. It has its own logical identity. Same thing here. Something can be read or sensory, and also we experience it as being read, and so on. So what I'm saying is that we have passive properties as well as active, that we there are such things, and we experience them that way. And that, in fact, if you try to subtract from any of these the passive properties, the whole thing disappears before your eyes. Let's see if I can make that clear. Let's stick with our friends, the materialists, and see what... Here's the claim is... reality is either exclusively physical or basically physical. And basically physical means if there's anything non-physical, it's produced by the physical.
Okay.
So either things have only this, or so if for everything, whatever, it's either physical or produced by the physical.
For example, a produced by the physical would be an idea really isn't a physical thing.
Right.
But my brain is what's producing it.
Okay, that's right. That's right. So that's a good example, because that's one of the ones they worry about the most, whether the physical can actually explain how someone could have an idea or an emotion or a desire, because they seem so irresistibly non-physical. But their claim is going to be everything is either exclusively physical or produced by the exclusively physical. And this brings us to a key word in this, what they want to identify there as the self-existent origin of everything else is the purely physical. Something's purely physical. Even if every single thing in the universe also has non-physical properties, somewhere buried in the core of the reality of that thing, there is the purely physical. There are the purely physical realities that generate everything else that's true about it. Okay, that's another way of just saying what I said up here. So they need to deal with the purely. Because if they're going to say this is the nature of the divinity, they can't leave it in relation to these. It's got to be able to exist independently.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so if you're saying purely physical, then when it's purely physical, I can't count it. Is that the idea?
Okay, that's where we're going. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
If it's purely physical, then it's not going to have any passive mathematical properties.
Yeah, and because it's purely.
Right.
Purely because, is the issue.
Because numbers aren't related to one another by physical laws. Numbers don't fall to the ground if unsupported. Numbers are related to one another by mathematical laws. And a number isn't a physical object. So if you're going to think of something as purely physical, you've got to subtract any quantity from it whatsoever, and it's not even countable. It's also the case that spatial shapes and locations aren't physical objects.
And I would have a hard time conceiving of a physical item that didn't exist in space.
I didn't say that. It's the other way around.
Oh,
physical things do exist in space. I think that's right, of course. But we can abstract just the spatial shape or the spatial location, and that's not a physical object. That spatial shape...
Suppose
we stick with the planet Earth, and it's slightly elliptical, okay? That shape we deal with, we measure, we use in calculations all the time. But that shape itself is not a physical object. It's not a solid, liquid, gas, or a plasma.
That's right.
And there are spatial laws. Similarly with the physical itself that we're trying to conceive here and put in the purely this is the what generates everything else. Well, purely that, right? That means it doesn't have logical properties either. But in that case, it's not logically distinct from anything else. If you can't distinguish it, logically distinguish it from anything else, you don't know what you're talking about.
Now, when you say logically distinguish...
That's right. According to the principles of identity and non-contradiction, a thing cannot both be true and false in the same sense at the same time, and everything is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but...
I can't look at your marker and say, well, that doesn't exist. Because you can logically demonstrate it does. Is that what you're saying? I'm missing.
No, so, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
Okay, so look, what we did with the mathematical, and you saw right away, if it's something's purely physical, then it can't be counted.
Yeah.
All right. If it's purely physical, it can't be distinguished according to the laws of logic. It can't, because you've dumped the law of identity and the law of non-contradiction.
Okay.
So now if you don't have the law of non-contradiction, then everything is and isn't whatever it is, which that's why contradictions are ruled out. So I'm saying that, in that case, all right away, you don't have any idea what you're talking about. Because if you can't distinguish it from anything else, you literally don't know what you're talking about. Similarly, if it's purely physical, it can't be sensorily perceived. That doesn't usually bother them. But the logic, yeah. And there's another one. This isn't one that's often been proposed as a divinity belief. But if something's purely physical, it's also divorced from the linguistic passive properties, and it can't be spoken of.
Yeah.
So whatever the heck this is, it's not independent of the rest.
I can't even call it purely physical because that's a linguistic term.
Yeah, I'm saying we have no concept of that at all. Now, you can reply to that, okay, I don't have a concept But it can be a limiting idea.
Okay.
A limiting idea is an idea we have that we can't parse, we can't pull it apart, and we can't analyze it and so on, but we have these in addition to concepts. And that's right, it's an idea. It's an idea that the physical side is self-evidently what is divine and generates everything, anything else, if there is anything else. And and I can't conceive of it purely, but I have the idea that it's the physical side of things that are what they really are at their most basic. And it's only the physical. Now, here's what happens to this. You can have this intuition. I've conceded that the naturalist, there are naturalists who to whom they have the same experience with respect to the mathematical or the spatial or the physical that I have with respect to God. When I read the gospel, mm-hmm. that's the truth about God from God. One of the famous materialists I heard give a lecture one time said, if you ask me why I'm a materialist, not sure what I'd say. He said, it's not because of the arguments. I guess I just have to say reality looks irresistibly physical to me. That's a good description of it's self-evident to me
yeah.
that this is
yeah.
this is the right one. So they can do that. But the point I want to make now is that people everywhere, all day, every day, have dozens and hundreds of self-evident beliefs form in their mind. Normal sense perception gives us hundreds of them every day. We look out the window, we see it's a nice day or it's raining. We look up the street and the bus is coming. So we step back out of the street. It's self-evident that the bus is coming. You can't say, prove mm-hmm. to me that your perception corresponds to it. You can't do that. You can't do it. You don't need to, though. Okay, so here's the point. Normally, people everywhere spontaneously test beliefs, even though they're self-evident, even though their experience is self-evident. I just gave a couple of examples of perceptual beliefs, and people test them all the time. Did you see what I saw? I don't think it's raining. Oh, but it is. Check again. I look outside and there's a drizzle. I missed the drizzle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's for perceptual beliefs. Same thing happens about memory beliefs that are self-evident. I know my name, address, and telephone number. But if we talk about the family picnic we had 3 years ago, and I say so-and-so is missing, that's how I remember it. That's self-evident to me. But somebody else says, oh, no, she wasn't. She was there. Really? Well, we get out photographs and we check, and I'm wrong. Because self-evident beliefs aren't infallible, if you remember our session about that. Similarly, when we come to the beliefs that were biasedly called rational intuitions, it was called rational only because people like such as Plato and Aristotle wanted it to turn out that only rational truths, only the laws of logic or math, fell under that last kind. But I've already pointed out, so does the belief in other minds, and so do divinity beliefs. So it's not unbiased to call these intuitions rational. They include the rational, but there's more than that. And divinity beliefs are experienced as self-evident as well.
Mm-hmm. Somebody wants to talk to you. I think your phone is ringing.
That's too bad. I thought I shut this off. Sorry about that. That does not show that I'm in demand.
That's
it
right.
Only shows that somebody's trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
All right. So, we naturally, spontaneously check on beliefs, even if they're self-evident. And the same thing happens even when we're dealing with such abstract subjects as logic and mathematics. This is supposed to be an axiom. Is that right? Can we check on it? The famous example is that the great mathematical logician Gottlieb Frege once set out a set of axioms from which we would get set theory. He's trying to reduce mathematics to logic. And he had his particular set, and Bertrand Russell constructed a proof that the set's inconsistent. They can't all be true because it ends in a contradiction. So there are ways we check on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my point. That naturalist belief can't be checked. There's no way to test it because you don't know what you're talking about.
Okay,
if you try to talk about the purely physical, that's already disappeared. As soon as you take away the passive properties of these other kinds, you're not thinking of anything at all anymore.
Okay, it's what I was just going to say. Is it right, when you try to get to that purely physical idea, why?
Yeah. The idea of
there are no categories with which to even speak.
The idea of the purely physical is empty.
Yeah.
There is no content. When you take away logical distinctness, the ability to be referred to in language, to take away spatiality and any quantity and so on, you don't know what you're talking about anymore. That's the argument. And that doesn't prove that self-evident belief is false. But what it does do is make it untestable. You can't claim that there are pragmatic advantages to putting your money here for what it is that is the divine reality. There are no pragmatic advantages to what you can't conceive of at all. What happens is that the materialist flips back and forth from talking about the purely physical, and then whenever they make an argument, it's the physical in relation to all the others. It's not purely physical. It's the physical as it is subject to logical laws and locatable in space and sensorily perceivable.
This is the thought going through my head then as you're talking. So as a Christian, I look at some of the, I read a lot.
Okay.
And I read some of these things where they talk about, we're looking for the grand idea.
Sure.
Some people are talking about the grand unifying theory of the universe.
That's
something
right.
Like that.
I've spoken of what it is that somebody accords the status of divinity, but people have used other terms for this.
Yeah, metaphysical stuff.
Metaphysically ultimate, and so on. Now, the grand unified theory is what Hawking and others wanted in physics, but they're already assuming the universe is only physical.
Yeah.
What they mean is a grand unified physics, and that will be the explanation of everything because everything is only physical. But that begs the question that we're talking about. We're talking about whether this is a legitimate self-evidency intuition as to what it is that's divine or metaphysically ultimate, whatever term you want to use. And I'm saying that with that experiment and thought that we just went through, what is physical that has no quantity, is nowhere, is not logically distinct, can't be perceived and can't be spoken of? Well, it's not anything we know.
Yeah.
Okay. Now my point about this is that these intuitions, I think I can show the same thing. It doesn't matter which one of these you plug in and test. You can't think of it apart from the rest. You can't conceive of it as being apart from the rest. But unless whatever the divine reality is that's characterized, these are supposed to be the nature of the divine reality. But unless that kind of thing can't exist independent of the rest, it can't be the cause of the rest.
Yeah. I was then, proceeding on from that, then as I think of, God is the creator of all this.
Yeah.
And the way God made me, the way he made you, the way he made other people, is that we need all of these other things to describe any one thing.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Okay.
So it's not that I've now proven that being a materialist is based on a self-evident divinity belief that's false, but one that can't be tested. What a scientist does is never conceiving of matter as purely physical. Matter is sensorily observable, including observing the results of experiments or reading out what the Hadron Collider shows us on the computer readouts. It has to do with certainly matter as logically conceived. It doesn't both exist and not. It's spatially locatable. It's mathematically calculable. You take mathematically calculable away from physics, there's no physics.
What I've seen is that it has been said that mathematics is the language of all the rest of the sciences.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay, that, yeah, there's a bit of a bias.
But
it's extremely important.
Yeah.
I'm contrasting this unfavorably with belief in God. Belief in God, I'm going to say, is testable, whereas strict materialism is not. And the fact that they switch back and forth from talking about the purely physical to treating it as though it's not purely physical creates the illusion that they've defended this claim. They haven't. They haven't come within miles of it. talking about physical as it is in space and subject to mathematical laws and logical laws and so on, it is not talking about the purely physical.
Mm-hmm.
So materialists like Paul Churchill on page 3, you just get started reading one of his books and it says, well, there's nothing, however, problematic about relating everything to the purely physical. That's the sentence at the bottom of page 3.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, there is. You don't know anything as purely physical.
Yeah, so he uses that very term.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's common. I'm not inventing it.
Okay.
Materialists speak about this all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm saying that may be self-evident to you, but it can't be tested. And I'm saying about belief in God, it can be. Well, so what do I mean? I certainly don't mean we put God in the test tube. What I mean is that we put belief in God to the test in our lives compared to our experience. What sorts of things might confirm belief in God? Well, if you remember, I define religious experience as any experience that generates, deepens, or confirms mm-hmm. a religious belief. Lots of events confirm belief in God for Christians. And for that matter, for Jews and Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
First off, answers to prayer. We pray for something. Sometimes something that seems highly unlikely, and it occurs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to prayers that we have on behalf of other people are often not answered the way we like. But there are still plenty of times it does happen. Other cases, we mentioned the near-death experiences, at least one of which I challenge anyone to explain as oxygen deprivation of the brain, where mm-hmm. my friend sees another friend that he didn't know had died, who tells him in this episode that he died, and when my friend comes to again, he tries to call him up, and his wife says he died last month. There are all sorts of experiences that do this, and including other kinds of religious experiences than seeing the Word of God to be true, the sense of God's presence.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about all of that under religious experience. So there are all these experiential ways that belief in God can be confirmed and strengthened. The materialist can't confirm and strengthen his at all, because he never deals with the physical as purely. And yet that's what his claim is. So if that claim can't be tested. So what I'm saying about mm-hmm. this is that each rests on an experience of self-evidence as to what it is that is the divine reality that generates everything else. But if you pick some aspect of the universe around us, such as mm-hmm. the quantitative, the spatial, the physical, the logical, the sensory, and so on, then what happens when you try to isolate it is that your very notion of it disappears, and there's no way to test it in thought, in imagination, let alone in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes out on the short end of the stick compared to belief in God. And that's the experiment in thought.